Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Vegan Ari Show. I am your host, Vegan Ari, and I am joined today, as always, by my lovely husband, Miko Alon.
Hi, guys.
Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. We have a fabulous show in store for you today. We're going to open up the show talking all about politics and current events, and then we'll be moving on to the new vegan product segment. This week, we are tasting the vegan extra crispy fried chicken by Better Chew. And then we'll be closing out the show with vegan animal rights news. Now, before we get started, I just want to encourage everyone, if you'd like to catch up with me or with Miko during the week, please do that on Twitter. I can be found at VeganAri and Miko can be found at MikoAlon, or feel free to use our hashtag VeganAriShow. And remember, if you enjoy our podcast, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing on Apple or Spotify or wherever you consume your podcasts. And just one last thing, we are always trying to get more listeners and subscribers. So if you wouldn't mind helping us out in that effort, we would be ever so grateful, whatever you can do. If you want to retweet me when I tweet about the show, thank you so much. And I see you, everyone. The people who retweet me every week, I really do appreciate it. A special thank you to you. If you want to make your own social media posts about the show, I love it. Thank you for that. If you want to post about it in a Reddit or a Facebook group you're in, wonderful. Now let's talk about money. If you want to, take out some commercial ads. I'm talking about, on television during a very high-profile event like the Oscars or the Super Bowl. I'm here for it. In fact, I'm available for filming, whatever you need. I appreciate that. If you want to take out bus ads or billboards or skywriting airplanes, that works too. Whatever you got, no matter how big or how small, no matter how expensive or how free, we really do appreciate all of it. So we are sending a big thank you to everyone who has helped to spread the word about the podcast. And we are sending a big thank you if you are about to help spread the word, even if it is for the very first time. Now, Miko, let's get down to business. First, before we get into politics, I just want to mention that this morning we got the very sad news that Nichelle Nichols, star of the original Star Trek series and the movies that followed, has passed away at 89 years old. And I gotta say, Nichelle played the character of Uhura on Star Trek. And I gotta say, I think she was my favorite. I love Uhura. She is the only woman in the original crew. The show premiered in the 1960s. And I think, this was really a trailblazing character, because I think it's one of the only times we saw, let me just frame it for everybody. Nichelle Nichols had this meeting with Dr. Martin Luther King in the 1960s, and this was after the first season of the show had already run. And he approached her at some event, told her he was a huge fan of the show. And then she announced to him that she was going to leave the show. She had wanted to pursue other acting opportunities on stage. And I'm paraphrasing here, and you can Google the actual story. She actually told it in an interview that she did with the Television Academy or something. Is that what it's called? The Television Academy? But basically what he said to her is like, you can't leave the show. He's like, this character is too important. This is the first time that people are seeing, a woman, let alone a black woman, in a role like this. And basically what he was telling her about was representation and how important that was and how important it was for people to see this character, specifically because she was a black woman on the crew of the Starship Enterprise in the show. And I just think it's, I'm very sad. I'm glad she got to live a very long life and everything, but I'm sad that she's gone, because she was such an icon and a legend and a trailblazer. And, she spoke about how much the role meant for, the whole country, really. Also, this was the first time an interracial kiss was ever shown on television, was between her and one William Shatner, who played Captain Kirk. Yeah, so I wanted to mention Nichelle Nichols because I just think she was just an incredible, incredible woman.
She really was a legend. And, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about people, you know, we are losing so many of the greats. And, you know, with the cast of Star Trek, people always talk about what a trailblazing show that was in so many ways. And I just think about a few weeks ago when somebody was complaining about Star Trek being woke. And this whole idea of like, tell me that you've never watched Star Trek without telling me. Star Trek was always visionary and boundary pushing and imagined, you know, an amazing future for humanity. And I hope we can get there.
Yeah. I mean, Gene Roddenberry's dream, I guess, or vision for the future is really a beautiful vision. And, you know, she talked about, you know, when she had met Dr. King at this event, she had already handed in her resignation to Gene Roddenberry, who was the creator and ran the show, just in case you're not a, you know anything about Star Trek. And she said that, you know, she had this conversation with Dr. King where he basically told her, you cannot quit. And there was a weekend, and then she came in on a Monday and said, hey, Gene, can I talk to you? And she went into Gene's office and said, you know, I had this meeting with Dr. King, and he said, you know, you can't quit. Like, this is too important, you know, what you're doing on the show. And she said that Gene Roddenberry looked up from his desk and said, well, thank goodness someone else gets what I'm trying to do here, you know? And I just think that one of the things, because I'm a big Star Trek fan, and, you know, and like you said, it was a groundbreaking show then, but it still is. They're still pushing boundaries with, because some of the Star Trek, I don't know if they call it the Star Trek universe or whatever, but there's currently shows. There's the Star Trek Strange New Worlds. There's Discovery. There's, you know, new Star Trek shows in that universe that are on different streaming platforms. And I think that one of the things that I loved about Star Trek growing up, because when I was growing up, it was The Next Generation was the show that was on television, is that it was very obvious to me as a young gay kid what they were doing with that show. And there's a lot of social commentary. There's a lot of stuff in there very cleverly done with regards to social justice, equality, prejudice. And I really do have to give that show so much credit. And, you know, specifically, you know, the actors on that show who really broke ground. And I think, you know, Nichelle Nichols will be remembered that way as really a trailblazer who showed so many people what was possible.
Yeah. And how many people she must have inspired.
Yeah.
And what an astonishing thing to be a part of.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to start out the show talking about Nichelle Nichols. Okay, let's talk about what's going on in the political realm.
In the non-Star Trek universe.
Yes.
Instead, the reality that we live in.
In the shit world that we live in. Non-Star Trek world. You know, I want to talk about just the incredible cynicism going on right now in politics. I want to speak first about this PACT Act, which is a bill that came to a vote in the Senate this week that is to help veterans who are suffering with cancer and other health ailments because of conditions that they're exposed to. And this didn't pass the Senate because Republicans voted against it. And I just want to say, this was a bill that had already passed the Senate in June. And then they like retooled it a little bit. They didn't really do much to it. And now Republicans are voting against it, not because they disagree with what's in the bill necessarily, or they disagree with helping veterans, but really to give the screw to the Democrats.
You know what? They actually do disagree with helping veterans, because this is a bill that's urgently needed. This particularly helps veterans who have or may develop cancer as a result of exposure to burn pits. Burn pits were right. The main way that the U.S. Army in particular destroyed of waste during operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. So there's an acute need for this bill. And they knew how important this was, and yet decided to basically stick a knife in the back of American veterans.
But why?
They did it, I think, just as a part of this. They have become singularly focused on basically blocking any efforts by the Democrats to do good in this country, to fuel resentment and frustration. I mean, think about it.
Even if it means denying our veterans, our men and women who were in combat zones, who were willing to give their life, even if it means denying them medical care. And to me, I feel like it's the height of cynicism, because you're holding back medical care for these men and women just because you want to, like you said, stick the knife in the back, not even in the back, in the front of the Democrats. And I just feel like, what is going on? It's just the ridiculousness of it. And real people are getting hurt.
Think about the level of cynicism it takes when these Republican senators, at every opportunity, pretend to respect the veterans and thank them and, you know, be on their side. These are the first people who are, you know, up in arms when Colin Kaepernick kneels on the football field and talk about how disrespectful that is to the troops. Disrespectful? You are literally condemning people who have cancer.
Yeah.
You know, to advance, you know, an agenda by a political party that does not give a shit about veterans. And it made me, I really was thinking about this. Like,
you've done a lot of work with veterans because of your.
Yeah.
You
and
know.
I don't understand what it is that draws veterans to the Republican Party. I think there's this like age old idea that Republicans somehow support the troops more than the Democrats. I don't even know where that comes from. But that is sort of the perception. But I was acutely, you know, started thinking about this because this week we also learned from Donald Trump himself at a speech that he gave at one of these Nazi rallies. I don't know what horrible place it was in. But he literally talked about how he had tried to award himself the Congressional Medal of Honor while he was president. But he was, quote unquote, dissuaded from it. And I just want to talk about the absolute obscenity of that act. Think about, you know, we know that there were veterans who stormed the Capitol on January 6th. We know that there are veterans who support Donald Trump. And, you know, veterans are very sensitive to questions of honor. And so, in case people don't know, the Medal of Honor is the single highest decoration and award that you can be given as a service member. It is given only for extraordinary acts of valor in combat. So here we have this piece of shit, Donald Trump, who cowered from service 5 times, never served, wanted to give himself an honor that during the 160-year history of the that the medal has been awarded, it's only been awarded 3,525 times, during which time 40 million service members have served. This piece of shit wanted to elevate himself into their category of soldier. And I have not heard this be a major news story. I have not heard veterans saying, what the fuck? This is the man who called them losers and suckers and who, you know, refused to go to commemorate the fallen Marines at the memorial during the World War I centennial celebration because it might mess up his hair. Why? Why? American veterans, wake up. The Republican Party does not support you. They love to pay lip service. They love to send you to war. But when you come back, you're on your own. And
well,
you know who has your back? Only the Democratic Party.
I will say, I mean, one of the people really speaking truth to power in this moment is Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart, he has been all over. He's been on Fox News. He's been on Newsmax. He's been, and he is not holding back. I mean, he is calling out these Republicans. He is saying, I mean, literally, motherfucker, fuck this, shit that. I mean, literally,
you know what,
that's
they
the,
should be,
you know,
that is exactly how they should be called out, because these people are all lying.
Yeah,
like Ted Cruz, one of the most unctuous, disgusting members of the United States Senate, tried to explain how the Democrats changed the bill and did something. This was exactly the same bill.
It's exactly the same bill. That's why I'm talking about the cynicism of it, because they're all talking about this $400 billion fund that's in this bill. That was in the bill in June that they passed. So don't blame it on something that you voted for a month ago and now you're not. And by the way, After they voted to torpedo this bill, how about the fist bumping that happened? That was the video that came out this week. They were fist bumping each other.
Ted Cruz fist bumping, yeah.
Right, that they just fucked over our veterans. So I'm like, I just think it's despicable. It's disgusting. And as far as the Medal of Honor for President Bonespurs, I mean, Lord.
This is the guy who, when we found out that Putin was putting bounties on American soldiers in Afghanistan, let him do it. Not a fucking peep from him.
And again, it's like, you know, I remember when Colin Kaepernick a couple of years ago, all these people came out and said he's disrespecting the troops because of the kneeling and this and that. I just want to say, if you have a problem with Colin Kaepernick disrespecting the troops because he's kneeling during the national anthem, but you have nothing to say about Republican senators fist bumping after denying our veterans who have cancer medical funding, you're a racist. There's no other way around it. Like,
Let's talk about one more thing, because I like to bring this up, because Colin Kaepernick took the knee at the expressed suggestion and guidance of a fellow player who was a decorated combat veteran, because that is how you show respect when you visit a fallen brother's grave. It's also what you do when you go, you know, in the field into a briefing. It was meant as a respectful gesture of protest. So the fact that people who are veterans pretend not to understand what that's about, again, examine what you're really angry about.
Well, I just want to remind people that a couple years before Colin Kaepernick did that, you know, in protest, Tim Tebow did it in protest. And nobody said anything about Tim Tebow. Is it because he's white? I mean, I'm just saying.
Is it because he did it for what? For abortion?
It was abortion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, you can't have it both ways. So if you take more of an issue with Colin Kaepernick than you do with the Republicans torpedoing legislation that would give our veterans medical funding, I think you need to take a good look in the mirror and ask yourself what that's all about. And, you know, talking about the cynicism in government right now, also this week, you know, it was a big announcement that Joe Manchin reversed course. They've been trying to pass this climate bill. There's also stuff in there about taxes. And, you know, he was really one of the holdouts. And he reversed course on it. So it looks like now they have a much better shot at passing it. I think they still have to get Kristen Sinema on board. But this was a big thing. And in the wake of Manchin announcing this and the news breaking about it, Susan Collins, who is one of the co-sponsors of the Respect for Marriage Act that we talked about last week, which would codify same-sex and interracial marriage, she was saying, well, now it's going to be so much more difficult to pass that bill, because, you see, Republicans are going to be really upset that the climate bill, that Manchin, you know, changed course. And I'm just saying, like, what the fuck does one thing have to do with the other? Why does it have to be that just because you guys are upset or you're pissed or whatever, now you're going to take it out on what? Interracial couples? On same-sex couples? What kind of ridiculous bullshit is this? And again, it just speaks to the cynicism and the unseriousness of the people in the Republican Party.
It's literally, I read, somebody said that a lot of Republicans feel like Joe Manchin, quote unquote, betrayed them. So, as you said, how deeply unserious is a political party when your sole agenda is to obstruct legislation that's good for the country, that's essential for the country, essential for the future? You know, think about all the things that Republicans have voted against. Assault weapons ban, lowering gas prices, you know, baby formula shortage.
Yeah.
Like, what is the purpose of you if you're only here to make life miserable for people? That's what I'm saying. Like, I think that their only agenda is to try to block as much progress as possible so that when the election comes around, people can be frustrated and say, how come Democrats haven't done anything? Well, the stuff that, look at how many bills the House has passed. And the only thing that stands in their way is the fucking Republican Party in the Senate.
I mean, I think the Democrats actually have done a lot. They've passed the infrastructure bill. They passed this Respect for Marriage Act. They passed an assault weapons ban. I mean, I know the assault weapons ban has virtually no shot of passing the Senate, but still, they passed it.
Only two Republicans in the House, in the entire House, joined on that bill.
They passed a bill protecting people's right to contraception. They are doing things. I think that people have this conception, or I should say misconception, that Biden is not getting stuff done simply because he's not a president that lives on Twitter. You know, Biden's not like this, like, flashy, like, social media. Yeah, and maybe that's a mistake. Maybe in today's world you have to be like that, but that's not who he is, you know? So maybe Americans just aren't paying attention. And because he's not, you know, every time he appears, you know, telling everybody everything he's doing. But I think that they're actually, especially with the very divided country that we find ourselves in, and quite frankly, divided government, I think they actually are getting stuff done. Sadly, I think, though, that Americans, when it comes down to it, it's when it comes down to that, you know, going to the voting booth, it's really always comes down to the economy. And I do think that, sadly, we are living in a moment of very bad inflation, 40-year high inflation. Gas prices are finally coming down, although you wouldn't know it if you read the news. And so I think that people, when they vote, ask themselves, am I better off than I was 4 years ago? Now, we still have 2 years to go. A lot could happen, but we'll see. I don't know if some of these social issues are, I mean, I hope that they drive voter turnout. I hope people see what's going on, and I hope that they, but again, you know, we're the economy right now, and I don't think that it's Biden's fault. I mean, there's inflation all over the world, you know, and now we're also talking about possibly entering a recession because there's been two quarters of the economy shrinking. You know, I don't know. I think we're living in a very, I mean, we're coming out of a once in 100 year pandemic. There was a lot of money infused into our country with these rescue plans and whatever, which needed to happen. But, you know, we're dealing with a lot. We're dealing with climate change. We're dealing with inflation. We're dealing with this, with the war that's still going on in Ukraine. We're dealing with a lot. So I don't know what this is going to do when it comes to people showing up and voting. I don't know.
No, to me, it's like, I don't know what analogy to draw here, but if you are concerned about your future and you decide to vote Republican to make it better, it's kind of like you're on life support and you don't like it. So how do you want to change your situation? You unplug the machine. Or you're an astronaut tethered to the space station. You're like, I hate dangling here. Let me cut the tether. That's what you're doing. You're going to send yourself into a one-way trip to the abyss.
Well, I do think, though, I think they named this bill that Manchin came around on, I think they used the word like inflation in it. It's like the inflation rescue plan or something. And I thought, well,
that's a good name.
Finally, Democrats have come around with the messaging, because, you know, that's something that we've always said, that Democrats don't know how to message shit. And yeah, that would be good to name it, like, you know, ending the inflation bill or whatever.
I mean, remember when they decided to call the major legislative package that followed September 11th, the USA Patriot Act?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Who's going to vote against the Patriot Act?
Right.
So maybe they're calculating that who's going to vote for inflation, more inflation. Although Republicans, of course, will.
The Republicans. So, yeah. Well, we'll see what happens next week. I hope that they bring this Respect for Marriage Act, though, to a vote. It looks like they're not going to do it until the fall. I hope that they do, though, because I want people to go on the record. This is something that I've been reading a lot about because it affects me personally. This is something that now over 70% of Americans support same-sex marriage. Even in the Republican Party, you have sometimes half or even more than half of people, depending on the state, who support same-sex marriage. I want to see what happens when this bill comes to a vote, if these Republicans vote against it. Not that I don't think that they will, because they have no soul.
No.
And if they're going to vote against veterans, I mean, why not vote against gay people? But still, I hope that they bring it to a vote soon.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see what happens.
All right, Miko. Well, with that, what do you say we move on and taste some new vegan products.
Let's do it.
All right. Yay, new vegan products. Okay, so today we are tasting the brand new plant-based extra crispy fried chicken by Better Chew. Now, this looks delicious. This looks very, very reminiscent of like fried chicken tenders or something. This looks really good. Okay. This is made from soy and wheat. It has 13 grams of protein per serving. I found this in the frozen section of the supermarket. Miko, tell us how you made this.
This is super easy. You basically just put the chicken in the oven and bake it for about 12 minutes. And just to mention, it's about 5 pieces per bag.
And this is like, would you call this like chicken tenders? How would you describe these?
It's interesting because the breading really looks like traditional fried chicken. So yeah, this essentially looks like a very generous amount of breading too. So we'll see.
All right, well, let's try it and tell everybody what we think. Getting a big piece here. Wow. Oh my God.
That's incredible.
That is really, really impressive. That is so fluffy and juicy. I'm sorry I'm chewing, everybody. I took a really big piece. That is packed with flavor. That is really good. I mean, I got to say, we taste a lot of chicken substitutes on the show. This is one of the best.
It absolutely is. And what to me is so impressive beyond the chicken has a wonderful texture, juiciness, saltiness.
Wow.
Is the breading. It's so fluffy. This literally feels like, even though I baked this in the oven, like just came out of a deep fryer or something.
Yeah. Like this reminds me of like, I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but like the breading that you would get on a Kentucky Fried Chicken thing. Like that's what this reminds me of. This is really, really impressive. This isn't like, you know, lots of times you get this, you know, the breaded vegan chicken and it's like, you know, this thin layer of breading and like maybe it's a little crispy, but whatever. This is like that thick breading that you would get at KFC. And honestly, I think it really adds to the experience of eating this because this tastes very much like traditional fried chicken that I remember from my youth. This is really, really good. I just like, honestly, I'd never heard of this brand before. I happened to stumble upon this at the supermarket and I picked it up. But this is an A-plus product. This is very good. Again, it's called Better Chew, and this is their extra crispy fried chicken. Wow.
And I will say, if you serve this to non-vegan friends, they will never know this is not animal-based chicken.
No, I mean, right now, my favorite plant-based chicken is the Daring Chicken, but this, honestly, is just as good. I mean, the Daring Chicken is different. That's like chicken pieces. It's not breaded. It's, you know, it's a different style of chicken. This is obviously fried chicken. And if you put this out on a platter with like some dips, like a barbecue dip, a ranch, maybe a buffalo sauce, it's going to blow people's minds.
They're going to lose really, their really minds good. In a good way.
Wow.
For sure. Wow.
Wow. All right. Well, there you have it. I give this an A+. Miko, A+ from you.
Yes, indeed.
Our review of Better Chew Extra Crispy Fried Chicken. Damn. Okay, Miko, what do you say we move on and do some vegan animal rights news?
Let's do it.
All right. Okay, everybody, it is time for vegan animal rights news. First story. There were some new studies published in the journal Science. These were, I believe, commissioned by the World Health Organization. And what they show is that the COVID-19 pandemic, it looks like, did start at wet markets in Wuhan, China. You know, there's been a lot of talk about whether this was created in a lab or whatever, but it looks like it did start at a wet market. At least, you know, that's what the findings of these studies show.
Yeah, the original thesis was correct.
Right. And I bring it up because I think that this directly relates to what we talk about a lot on the show, which is that factory farming, animal farming has a potential, not just potential because it happened, it puts the entire human population at risk because of zoonotic diseases. We talked about how, for example, in Africa, zoonotic diseases were up 60% in the last decade. Now we see this COVID-19 pandemic, which has affected every single part of the world. And I think if we don't change the way that we do things, meaning wet markets, factory farming, all of that, we're just, and I hate to use this expression, but we're just sitting ducks for the next pandemic. And I feel like, do you think we've learned anything from this?
No.
Right. So I am worried that, who knows, the next pandemic could start on a pig farm in Iowa or a chicken farm in North Carolina or wherever. So I just feel like it's sad to me that even though we're still in the midst of this pandemic, it seems like we haven't learned shit. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. I mean, that is the history of human, frankly, technological advancement, is the unforeseen consequences that end up being incredibly destructive. And that just, is, yeah.
Really?
How can we think that we can imprison, torture, and kill billions of animals and it's not going to have, a horrific consequence in the end to ourselves?
Right. They're just, these places are just breeding grounds for viruses and bacteria. So, anyway. Okay. Next story. There was a great piece on CNN covering the Libasa Wildlife Sanctuary. This is in Liberia. And they specifically rescue pangolins.
They've
rescued hundreds of pangolins. And I bring this up because I don't know if many people understand, well, first of all, who pangolins are. They're these really adorable animals that are native to Asia and Africa. They're actually the only scaled mammal. They look like almost like little anteaters or something.
Yeah,
they're really, really cute.
Crossed with a pine cone.
Yeah, they're so cute. But they are the most trafficked animal in the world. And they are endangered. They, sadly, up to 1 million of them are killed every year, not just for their meat, but for their scales, which are used in certain medicine. I don't know. I guess it's an Eastern medicine thing. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe that's where the scales are used. And so these animals are in a dire situation. And I just wanted to bring attention to the sanctuary, who is doing their best to try and help them and to raise awareness. I know that a lot of animal organizations talk about what's going on with the pangolin trade, but it's just really, really sad. You know, these animals are just facing a very devastating situation. So thank you to everyone at the Libasa Wildlife Sanctuary. And yeah, I mean, read up on what's going on with pangolins. It's really sad. And I don't know, we've got to find something that we can do to help them. Okay, next story. Representative Jamie Raskin is in the news. He sent a letter to President Joe Biden asking him to include at least one vegetarian entree at every federal facility across the country.
I'm kind of surprised that that isn't already the case.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying that he wants to do this to improve health and also to mitigate climate change. This letter was co-signed by 31 other Congress members. And I don't know if you know this, but did you know that Jamie Raskin, that his son, who passed away last year, was a very staunch vegan animal rights activist?
Yes, I knew that.
And so I have no doubt that his son inspired him. And I would like to see Biden do this. You know, even if it's just, you know, a drop in the ocean, I think it still sends a message. You know, I think if we're going to be serious, if we're talking about passing this climate change bill and whatever, well, what we eat has a lot to do with climate change. So no, it would be great to see the administration.
This would be
stance.
Would be an amazing start. And Jamie Raskin is an all around badass.
Oh, he so is. I mean, he has been involved in this January 6th committee.
Yeah, gun control, Yeah. He's a very powerful voice.
He really is. I think he's from Maryland. And yeah, he is a badass. And I appreciate him and these 31 other Congress people, you know, writing to the president and saying, you need to get on board with this. We'll see what happens. Okay, next story. The first ever vegan winners of Food Network's The Great Food Truck Race. I don't watch any of these shows. Was announced this week. This was a business called Senorita, and they're actually a Los Angeles-based Cuban pop-up. Nice. So I guess they have this reality show where the different food trucks compete, and they won.
Fabulous.
Yeah, and they're vegan.
Congratulations.
And you know, it looks like they're woman-owned as well. I mean, this is really cool. I've never seen this food truck. You see food trucks all over LA. I've never seen them, but that's kind of cool that they're based here and that it's vegan Cuban food. That's awesome.
I would love to try that.
Yeah.
It's rare to find vegan Cuban food to begin with, so let's track them down.
Yeah. There was, I don't know if it's still open, there was a great vegan Cuban place in South LA somewhere. Did we ever go there? I don't think we've ever been there, though, but no. I've heard good things. So, yeah, if we ever see this food truck, we'll have to try it. Again, they won the top award on the Great Food Truck Race on Food Network. Well done, ladies. Okay, next story. Alaska Airlines just announced that they are adding a vegan option to their menu. This is called Soy Meets World. That's the name of the menu item. And it's essentially a salad. It is a bed of mixed greens packed with roasted broccoli, fresh cucumber slices, scallions, pickled carrots, brown rice. It's topped with fried tofu and roasted cashews.
Sounds good.
I mean, I would try this if I was on an Alaska Airlines flight. Thank you, Alaska Airlines. Okay, next story. Oatly is in the news. They have partnered with 16 Handles, which is like kind of like a Froyo place. And they are going to be introducing, I believe they already carry Oatly in terms of their soft serve stuff, you know. But they are doing two new flavors of vegan soft serve for 16 Handles. They're going to be doing one called Chocolate Cake and one called Marshmallow and S'mores.
Mm.
And it's going to be available in August. Oh, my. That sounds delicious. I want to get my hands on some of this Oatly soft serve. I don't think we have 16 Handles here, though. I've never seen one.
We have
what's it called? What's that other one called? I see it all the time. It's a Froyo place, and it's like a...
Pinkberry?
No, it's the other one. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Okay, anyway, next story. I'm a mess this week. Next story. Okay. There is a wine... online wine store, I guess is what I would call them, called Virgin Wine. And they're saying that the sales of their vegan wines were up by 51% this year.
Nice.
They said a lot of people are getting into whether or not their wines were produced with animal products, and they don't want to buy wines produced with animal products, so they are buying more vegan wine.
Love it.
Yeah, I think this is something that Miko and I are big wine drinkers, so. But I think this is something that a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, wine itself, the finished product, doesn't have any animal ingredients in it. But in the production of wine, sometimes they use animal ingredients in the fining process. They use isinglass, which are, it's disgusting, but fish bladders. They sometimes use dairy in it, and it does something when they're fining the wine to soften the wine and clarify the wine. They also, when they filter the wine, that also can have an animal element involved. But it is very easy to produce wine without all that shit. And a lot more winemakers are starting to advertise their wine as vegan. It's not as easy as you think to find out whether a wine is vegan or not. In fact, when we first went vegan, I wound up calling some of the vineyards, some of our favorite, you know, where some of our favorite wines come from. And even the people there did not know. They were like, well, you have to talk to the winemaker. We don't know. Hopefully that's starting to change. And hopefully more people are inspired to create vegan wine. It doesn't affect really the flavor. It's just you know, about using different materials. So I'm glad to hear that the sale of vegan wines are up, and hopefully more wines will take note. Remember we tasted that vegan wine on the show not too long ago by Aveline?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, that's Cameron Diaz's wine label, and all their wines are vegan, and they're really good. So look for Aveline. It's pretty widely distributed. Okay, next story. Remember I was talking about that 3D printed steak that they are doing? It's an Israeli company called Redefine Meat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's now going to be available at 6 different restaurants in London.
Really?
So it's getting out into the world. I can't wait to try this stuff. I mean, I haven't heard of this making it over here yet, but like I have with other companies, I'm going to follow this story and see when it gets here. I would love to try 3D printed steak. Okay.
Yeah.
It's not lab grown. It's still plant based, but
I can't wait to try it.
I'm very interested in trying that. Okay. So if you're in London, look for the 3D printed plant based steak by Redefine Meat and tweet at me and tell me how you like it. Okay. Next story. There is a California based organization that is using AI to try to talk to animals.
Really?
Yes. I don't know exactly how they're doing this in terms of, I hope these animals are not in captivity, but they are using AI to study and develop, I guess, language tools to try and converse with animals. And it's not just like they're doing this with dolphins, whales, crows. It's really fascinating.
I mean, I think I'm right when I say this, that I think there are already existing, you know, very limited capacity, but translations of dolphinese. Like they know dolphinese expressions that dolphins use, like names for things. And they're able to communicate in a limited fashion, I think, or at least understand what dolphins are saying to each other. So this could be really interesting because I think AI can probably map and understand that much better than we can because our language systems are so different.
Well, also, you know, AI can run calculations so much quicker than we can. So if all this information is getting fed into this AI thing, I think the AI might have more luck than we would at deciphering exactly what's going on. I think it says a lot about us, though, that we tell ourselves we're so intelligent. We tell ourselves we're so much better than animals and that we can do all this amazing shit and whatever. We can't even decipher their fucking language. So I don't think we're so great. I'm just saying, like, you know, I mean, wouldn't that be, if we were so much more, you know, intelligent than animals, wouldn't that be easy for us to do? And we really can't. Like, and we know that animals do. I mean, a lot of scientists are very hesitant to call it language because, you know, God forbid we should bestow upon animals anything that us precious humans can do. But of course it's language. Of course it's language when animals are communicating with one another through vocalizations and they know what they're saying. That's what it is. And we can't really, I think one of the reasons why we don't want to call it language is because we want to protect ourselves from admitting that we're maybe not as smart as we think we are.
Well, it's interesting because I've read quite a bit about AI understanding human language and creating in human language. Like there's all these projects that, you know, essentially very advanced bots are asked to like write academic papers on a subject, something very obscure and specific, and they create these incredibly detailed articles. But people can't determine because essentially these bots have access to all the information that's available on the internet. Is it copied? Is it synthesized? Like, how does the computer understand the information that it's presenting to us? And I mention that to say that I'm sure that AI can understand dolphinese pretty quickly, develop an understanding of the language system. It's more, how does it explain to us how that language works? But I think that we can probably have like a Rosetta Stone in our existing knowledge of saying, we believe this is the dolphinese word for that, and this means this. And from that, probably AI, I would imagine, within the next decade, can probably map out the language pretty extensively.
Even if we can, though, maybe dolphins don't want to talk to us.
They might be like, yeah, holy shit, it's getting hot in the ocean, stop it.
Or maybe they'll be like, you know what, fuck off. We don't need to talk to you. You know how they say, like, cats really understand what you're asking them to do, but they just...
Oh, they totally understand.
They have no interest
because
in you.
Because you can tell if you call for your cat, sometimes your cat comes, sometimes your cat's like, I don't feel like it.
So that's what I'm saying. Maybe dolphins will be like, you know what? Not that interested. Or maybe the crows will be like, yeah, I really have nothing to say to you.
I mean, cats... Didn't you say that cats meow only at humans? They don't really meow to each other.
It's true.
I mean, they can express irritation and things like that, but they don't really talk to each other the way they talk to us.
No, cats don't really meow at each other. They meow at people to manipulate us into doing what they want us to do.
Don't say manipulate. They politely ask and you must comply. They make a request.
It's a manipulation tactic. Okay, and finally, my last story of the week. It's kind of ending on a downer, but okay, here we go. There's been this really sad article in Mother Jones, which talks about wildfire smoke and how it affects animals on ranches and factory farms. And it really is very sad. You know, they're saying that people during wildfires can leave an area or they can go inside and, you know, you have air purifiers and whatever. You can try and protect yourself from wildfire smoke. But animals that live outside, there's nothing they can do. And so they're talking about, you know, this article was specifically mentioning, for example, cows, and it does affect their health. This article was speaking about it in terms of milk yield. And that, you know, milk production goes down. But they were also then later in the article talking about horses and how horses are known to have these like big lungs and they suck in so much air. And, you know, when they're exposed to wildfire smoke, what that does. And so it really is very sad to think that we are, by exacerbating climate change, and which exacerbates these fires, we are putting more animals at risk, specifically wildlife, but also the animals that we keep trapped on our farms. And yeah, it's just it's kind of like what I was talking about last week about how I believe climate change, while it'll affect the human population, no doubt, I think the ones who are really going to suffer the most from climate change are going to be the animals.
Yeah.
So this is just a sad reality. And we're dealing with now. I mean, there was another fire that just started this week. I mean, we are in fire season in California, but there was another fire that just broke out in Northern California. Already 50,000 acres are burned. I mean, it's like, it's just sad. And without really any answers to how we're going to deal with this drought, I don't really see much end in sight.
Yeah, that is the sad reality.
Yeah. Well, on that happy note, Miko, I should have ended with a happy story.
I should have switched these two stories.
Well, sorry for ending on a downer, everybody. I'll do better next week. Anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening. We love doing the show, and we love you guys. If you want to catch up with me or with Miko during the week, you can always do that on Twitter. I can be found at VeganAri, and Miko can be found at Miko Alon, or feel free to use our hashtag VeganAriShow. And remember, if you enjoy our podcast, please consider leaving us a review and subscribing on Apple or Spotify or wherever you consume your podcasts. Hit that 5-star thing too. That helps. And just one last thing. If you wouldn't mind helping us spread the word about the show, we would be ever so grateful for that. Whatever you can do, we do appreciate it. You can retweet me. I would love that. You can make your own social media post about the show. You can post about it in a Facebook group that you're in. You can take out commercials, billboards, bus ads. Like I said, I'm available for filming. Miko, are you available for filming?
I am, yes.
Okay, good.
So audio, too.
We're both and seriously though, we really do appreciate everyone who helps us out there, so thank you. Miko, anything you want to add?
I am good.
Then let's leave the people alone. If we don't hear from you this week, we will chat with you next weekend. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. I feel like I've been locked up tight for a century of lonely nights waiting for someone.